Ray Shadell, owner and founder of Claritax Books, tells us about the origins and challenges to get it to where it is today. He shares with us other useful insights into his career, as well as career advice and tips. You're listening to episode 69 of the Tax Professionals Podcast and episode 10 of the Tax Career Success Secrets series, where high-achieving tax professionals share the secrets behind their career success.
Welcome to the Tax Professionals Podcast, the podcast dedicated to helping you improve your tax career. Here's your host, Jack Bonehill.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this episode. Ray Shadell, owner and founder of Claritax Books, joined me back in January to talk about his career and share his career advice and tips. Ray has always enjoyed writing and publishing, and that's ideally where he would have worked for his full career. However, like many tax professionals from his generation, he fell into a job in tax at the then Inland Revenue. He moved to private practice and became a tax partner at what is known as Ours before making his move into publishing, which was a somewhat brave and bold move. I have a lot of respect for the move, as he was following what he enjoyed over money or prestige, and it wouldn't have been an easy decision. He worked as a senior technical editor at CCH alongside running his own tax consultancy until he decided to start Claritax Books in 2011. He now runs Claritax Books but also does some tax work for Six Forward Capital Allowances. Given he has essentially had multiple roles at a single time at many points in his career, I had to ask him how he managed that, because I was sure it was no easy feat. One thing that really stood out to me about Ray was his professional integrity, and I'm sure that's gone a long way in getting himself to where he is today. And also, like me, he has a strong belief that tax professionals should be able to use and interpret tax legislation and be able to communicate that clearly and simply. For those of you who do want to be able to do that, you may be interested in the Tax Research Masterclass, which covers that in detail. Full details of the masterclass are at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/masterclasses. The next one should be in September this year, 2023, although the dates are not confirmed yet. Ray has kindly set up a discount code for you and any other listeners to get 5% off everything that Claritax has to offer. The code is TTPP5, and TTPP just stands for the Tax Professionals Podcast. So just again, the code is TTPP5, all one word, no spaces or anything. The discount will be available for 2 months when this episode went live, so you will have until the 27th of April 2023. There may be other discounts for you in the future too in relation to Claritax, so keep an eye out if you're interested. Rough timings for each of the sections of this episode can be found in the details section of the episode within your podcast player, or by heading on over to the show notes at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP69. This is the only link you'll need to remember for this episode, as all the other links will be included within this one. If, like me, you're interested in knowing what you're worth in terms of salary, then get in touch with James from the Tax Recruitment Company to benchmark what you're currently on. From his interaction with many different businesses and tax professionals, he has current knowledge of salary rates based on experience and specialism. Speaking with James could help you to negotiate a pay rise or determine it's time to find a new role. Contact details for James can be found in the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP69, or you can book a chat with him by heading on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/salary chat. So get in touch with James to benchmark your salary or to discuss potentially available roles, particularly if you work in corporation tax, as he is currently recruiting for many roles in this area. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Could you tell us a bit about you and your tax career?
Hi. Well, I think I've had a wonderful career in tax, really. It's not what I intended to do, but I look back on it. It's been good. I originally responded to an advert to join the then Inland Revenue when I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. And so I ended up training as a tax inspector, but moved out fairly quickly to be on the other side of the fence, as it were. So I've had, after revenue training, I've had client-facing advisory work. I had a national tax role in a top 20 firm. I had my own consultancy business working across a few areas of tax. I've gradually sort of become more specialist. So the only tax advisory work I do these days is capital allowances. But then I got into writing and editing, and together those roles, gave me the skills and knowledge and experience and contacts to allow me to set up Claritax Books, which is what occupies most of my time nowadays, publishing sort of high quality tax titles. So in terms of tax and a career, look, tax can be perceived as dull, and in one sense it is, but actually it's about acquiring a high-level technical skill, and then it's about interacting with people and sort of trying to give a high-quality service and persevering. And you know, that's common to many jobs. And for me, yeah, it's been I've got no regrets at all about a life working in tax.
I think actually your kind of way into tax was very typical for your generation. I would say a lot of people I've spoken to, you started probably around the same time as you, just ended up getting a job at HMRC, and it just kind of spiraled from there in a way, and they ended up sticking to it.
Yes, I think that's right. It wasn't HMRC in those days, but, you know, that's how we all know it now. It was sort of the Inland Revenue. So with a bigger, a more obvious split between the direct and indirect tax aspects. But yeah, a lot of people did that. My boss at the Revenue, the district inspector, was a guy called Mike Mannion, whose name lives on in a CGT tax case. And his brother, Richard Mannion, also trained with the Revenue. And when I left the Revenue, Mike explained to me how he'd decided to stay in the Revenue, and he pursued his whole career as a tax inspector. His brother, Richard, moved into the tax consultancy world, into the accounting world, and had a great career on this side of the fence. So it's horses for courses, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good start. It's always been a good starting point, I think, for a lot of people. In any case, whether it's now or in the past, just because of the kind of the breadth of experience you get and some of the things you won't see as on the private side of things.
That's right. And very good training, I have to say. It was 3 years of thorough training, sort of going to a training center once a week, and study time and lots of studying. So, you know, it's obviously different from doing a chartered accountancy qualification or a tax qualification outside the Revenue. But yeah, it was good training. And it was funny, from literally day one, knowing nothing about tax at all, I went in as a graduate. And, you know, as soon as we started writing letters out, we signed off HM Inspector of Taxes, which seems extraordinary because we knew nothing at all.
Yeah. So obviously now then, a lot of your time is spent, almost your time is spent working on Claritax books related work. Yeah. What is it that really kind of interests you about, like, the writing and the editing side of things? And because I know for me, what I quite like about it is doing the research beforehand. I enjoy less doing the actual writing of it, but I like kind of the preparation to do the writing. Which parts of it is it that you like, Ray?
Yeah. I like breaking technical content down and trying to express it clearly using writer skills. So, I really enjoy working in tax, but if I'm honest, I think my sort of most natural skill, if you like, is writing clearly. And that's what I love. And that's what drove me to move into the publishing world halfway through my tax career. And that's what drives me now with my own writing. And obviously now we have a lot of other authors, but I'm obsessed about presenting things clearly in a way that's hopefully helpful for people reading. That's where my passion is, I suppose.
So would you say then you actually enjoy the writing more than the editing, or would you say it's roughly the same?
I love the writing. I mean, I still write with a colleague, Jake Isles of Six Forward Capital Allowances. I still write to hefty textbooks on capital allowances. And yeah, I really enjoy the writing. I like going into the legislation thinking, God, that's horrible. What does that actually mean in practice? And then trying to turn that round and express it clearly so that somebody who's got a real world capital allowances problem will be able to understand, you know, what's going on. I mean, in my field, sort of fixtures in property is a particular sort of niche within the niche of capital allowances where there's a lot of misunderstanding about it. So I love trying to express it and get over how it really works. So I began with little tax articles, and then I started to write tax digests, and then small books, and now big books, you know.
Yeah. You always have to start with something small, don't you, with these things, then build upon it.
Yeah. The then editor of taxation magazine. Gosh, I hope I've got his name right. Malcolm Gunn, I think. He was very good to me. But the first time I suppose I was in my 20s when I first wrote an article for Taxation magazine, and he sort of took it on and, you know, gave me a little bit of friendly advice about it and published it. And that was the start for me, really. So I'm very grateful to him.
Yeah. I will just say, actually, I've only read or used one of the Clary Tax books. It's the one that Keith Gordon wrote on Schedule 36 notices. And it was back end of last year when I did it, but I found it incredibly useful just because it was so specific on that one topic, which I needed at the time. And I didn't really need to go to many other places apart from like looking up the cases that were referenced and stuff to get a little bit more detail. So yeah. I'm guessing all the Claritax books are similar to that, because the capital allowance is one that you're talking about, for example. Again, very, very niche. And I imagine it pretty much gives you everything that you need to have on that topic.
Yeah, that's generally the idea. I mean, Keith was one of our first authors and is our most prolific author. He writes 4 books for us. I mean, many of your listeners will know Keith Gordon, who's a very good tax barrister and very, you know, really makes contributions to the tax world in all sorts of ways. And, you know, I've got a huge amount of time and respect for Keith. And yes, his 4 books for us are all relatively short, although actually he does one on sort of tax appeals going to the first tier tribunal, which has grown over the years. So some of our books are quite a lot bigger than that. Because, you know, topics, if we've got a book on inheritance tax or VAT or property investment, they just need to be bigger than a book on discovery assessments or, as you mentioned, Schedule 36 information notices. So, but yeah, we try and have that common approach to all of our books.
So for you personally then, Ray, what would you say is the biggest achievement from your career for you personally?
It would have to be the publishing company, Claritax Books. So we launched in 2011, so 12 years ago. I didn't have any working capital. We didn't have any authors. We didn't have any customers. We didn't have any books. And we were selling mainly hard copy books just as the world was going more and more online. So, you know, looking back on it, you sort of think, why did you do it? But 12 years on, we've currently got 31 books in print. We also license most of our content to Krona I, who make it available as part of their broader package of tax commentary online. And alongside the specialist titles we've just been discussing, we also now have 6 sort of general tax annuals covering most of the key taxes. And I think one way or another, our content's used now by nearly all of the top 100 firms, not quite all, but the great majority, and by thousands of smaller firms. And, you know, we've had really good feedback. So, yeah, that sort of, I'm pretty sure I would say that's the biggest achievement of my tax career. It's been very hard work, but great fun.
Yeah, well, I'm sure particularly in the beginning when you had no writers and no capital, to then take it to where it is now, it must have taken a lot of hard work and effort. So I'm sure you're proud of where it's got to today.
It's certainly taken a lot of hard work. Yeah. And I like to think we now, you know, you've got in the tax world, you've got the 2 huge players, Lexis and Krona, and you've got Bloomsbury with their background of sort of Bloomsbury professionals, part of the bigger Bloomsbury group. And they sort of bought out a lot of existing titles. So considering we started from scratch, sort of build it up from nothing, I like to think we now punch above our weight alongside our sort of the bigger tax publishers.
Yeah. I think you probably are. I would think of you guys before thinking of Bloomsbury, 100%.
Interesting to hear.
So from looking at your LinkedIn anyway, right, this is where pretty much I've got all this detail from, but it looks like a lot of your roles have kind of overlapped with each other, as I'm kind of terming it. So like running your own consultancy has overlapped with being a senior technical editor at Krona, I think it was at the time, and also the small period where you went back to Mazars. And similarly now with Claritax Books, you don't just do Claritax Books, you do some work, some consultancy work through Six Forward Capital Allowances, I believe, as well. So
yes.
How have you kind of like managed all this? Because obviously doing multiple roles at the same time can't be easy, right? You have demands and pulls from all directions, I'm presuming. So how have you kind of coped with all of that?
Okay, yeah, no, that's a very good question. Okay, I think for me, it was sort of born out of necessity, but it's actually worked really well. So I was a partner for 6 years with Neville Russell, which became Mazars. And for a mixture of personal and professional reasons, I chose to resign as a partner. It was my own decision, and to start a tax writing career, which was kind of what I'd always wanted to do, really. So I went to work for CCH, which sort of became Krona, effectively. But I knew when I did that, there would be a big income hit. You know, you potentially can earn more as a tax partner than as a sort of author or as an employed author or editor. I had a young family at that time, and my wife chose to look after the children rather than taking on a paid role. So I, you know, earning was important.
Yeah.
So I agreed with CCH, who were employing me, that I could do some tax consultancy work alongside, and I set up my own tax consultancy company. I think the key thing is you just have to play fair with everyone. If anything, I probably worked harder for CCH than I would otherwise have done, just so that there was no question of them missing out by allowing me to do consultancy work alongside. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Because I think that's the worry for a lot of employers, isn't it, where their staff are going to do more than just work for them, is that the balance is going to end up going to their like personal thing, if you want to call it that. Because I suppose the consultancy was more of your personal thing. It was something that you owned, something that you had like full control over, whereas obviously for CCH, you wouldn't have had that same like freedom in a way.
Yeah. No, that's true. But my role for CCH was involved working from home. So I was immediately saving, 5 hours a week of travel time from when I was working at Mazars. I was, you know, it was half an hour each way, 5 days a week. So that was 5 hours, which I could sort of bag for extra work, if you like. And then inevitably, if you're in a bigger office, you have endless meetings that you have to attend and so on. And so I found it was possible to give CCH what they needed to have from me, and find time to do. I think I did about 10 hours a week of sort of private, you know, of consultancy work through my company. And you know, CCH were happy, and I, as I say, I played fair with them. And yeah, in a way, that's continued, really. So sort of rather different reasons now, but having moved into writing and publishing, I didn't want to lose totally my capital allowances sort of knowledge that I built up with a lot of experience. So I have this part-time technical role with Six Forward Capital Allowances, and really the same principles apply. They know completely where they stand. They've been very good to me in terms of sort of fitting around my other work. But if they want something done fast, you know, maybe there's a capital allowances case and they want an article on it or you know, whatever it might be, or my input on a sort of particularly unusual capital allowances technical problem, I really try to deliver a high quality response fast so that they're not losing out in any way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's sort of... How do you summarize that? I think if you're open and everybody understands, you know, how they fit in, then I think it can work. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it can. Just out of curiosity, your role at CCH when you were writing for them then, was that a full-time writing role and then you just did like the consulting stuff on top, or was it like, say, 4 days worth of hours?
If I remember right, I began working for them as a 70% role and did my consultancy alongside. But I think fairly quickly, I realized I could go full time. So it became a full time role, you know, a sort of 5 days a week role for CCH, but still with my consultancy alongside, as I say, just by putting in the extra hours.
Yeah, interesting. I think it's quite a good idea, actually, for people who do want to try and do something themselves, is to get a part-time role where they can also do their own thing, because it almost like de-risks the situation in a way.
It is a risk. I've taken various sort of risks over my career time, and exactly, if you can sort of try and keep your foot in the door with something else, then it does at least give you something to fall back on as well, and perhaps a bit of guaranteed income.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, to benchmark your salary, find out what you're worth, or discuss available tax roles, get in contact with James at the Tax Recruitment Company. His contact details can be found in the show notes for this episode at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP69, or by heading on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/salary chat.
So I think, just coming back to when you left Mazars, when you resigned as a partner first time around then, so it sounds like actually for you at that point, you valued doing, I suppose, work that you would enjoy more rather than, say, the financial side of it. Was that always the case for you, or did it kind of change as you got further through your career?
Okay, so I've already mentioned that I sort of got into tax almost by mistake. I mean, it wasn't what I was intending to do. It was actually publishing was what I'd set my heart on. And then when I got into the tax world, I assumed I'd left publishing behind. And yeah, I had a young family. I've got three boys who were all, you know, young. And we needed quite a lot of income. So I was very much focused on sort of building up a reasonably well-paid tax career. And I suppose in a sense that peaked as a partner. I mean, times have changed a bit, but I would just give a slight caveat that being a sort of junior partner in a big firm, it wasn't megabucks. You know, it was a good income, but it wasn't perhaps as high as some people might imagine. And when I left the profession, in a sense, to move to CCH, I think I accepted that there would be a short-term dip in my income, but I think I also thought that by doing the consultancy work, I would be able to end up not too far off where I had been.
Okay, yeah, so you essentially got back to the same point in terms of income, but you were doing work that you enjoyed more overall than you would have done previously.
Yeah, I mean, did I get to the same point? To be honest, I can't quite remember, but you know, but doing consultancy alongside what became a full-time writing role, it wasn't very obviously different from what I'd had before.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever look back and think that you would have done things differently if you were to go back and do it again, or would you play it the same way, do you think?
I really don't have any regrets about the decisions I've made. My dad, who's not been alive now for 15 years, he and I were very close, and he would always advise me to be cautious and would probably have been horrified by some of the decisions I took after he was no longer alive. But they were, in a sense, I mean, leaving a partnership with a big firm is a bit of a crazy decision, maybe, and certainly leaving a secure employment with CCH to launch Claritax Books was probably the bigger, riskier step. Would I do it again? I mean, I just don't regret doing it at all. And whether I'd have the guts to do it now, I'm not quite sure. But I'm pleased I did, you know, they were done basically for the right reasons. I mean, at CCH, I had an excellent boss, Paul Robbins. I was working from home. I was sort of earning enough to live off, you know, okay. We weren't rolling it, but it was all right. And I really enjoyed working for them. But I was 50, I think, and I wasn't sure I wanted to carry on doing the same thing for another. I'd done it for 8 years and really enjoyed it. But did I want to do it for another 15 or 20 years? Maybe not. So I just felt I still wanted one more challenging. Publishing was what I'd wanted to do. And I felt it was just something I could do that was worthwhile. I actually spoke with Keith Gordon and John Endicott and asked them both if they would write for me if I launched a publishing business. And they both said yes. If they'd both said no, I'd probably have stayed with CCH. I'm sure I would have done. But they both said yes, so Claritax Books was born.
Ah, so actually then, so that's an interesting point, I think. So before you actually decided to launch Claritax Books, you already kind of started trying to get it off the ground in the first instance by doing some things first, like talking to Keith Gordon, et cetera?
Yeah, only conversations. I wasn't sort of moonlighting in any way from CCH, but I knew Keith. I'd known Keith for a while, and I knew John Endicott, and so they were really, you know, they were just two friends who I knew could write. So it was just a conversation, because as I say, we began with a completely blank sheet, and if nobody was going to write for the publishing business, there would have been no publishing
business.
I think that was literally the only sort of preparation I did before making a decision, was to speak to those two guys and just see how they felt.
When you did start Claritax Books, did you have much of a plan B in case it didn't go as you would have hoped?
Oh, gosh. I still had my consultancy business. So that was going on alongside, but it was fairly low key. But I could probably have moved that up a gear or two. Would CCH have taken me back if, you know, if I'd gone off for a year and asked them to come back? I don't know. I'd had a very nice time with them and got on really well. So maybe they would have done, but there's a balance. In a sense, you do have to burn your boats and sort of throw everything at what you're doing. But yes, I had that consultancy as something to fall back on.
Yeah. What would you say then, anyway, right? You have alluded to like some of the difficulties in the beginning then when you started Claritax. What do you think has been like the most challenging thing about getting Claritax to where it is today?
Well, at the beginning, selling was definitely the issue. I've been surprised, grateful, honoured, really, by the list of authors who have been willing to write for what is now a fairly well-known tax publishing company, but, you know, literally nobody had heard of it because it hadn't existed at the time. And, you know, we've mentioned Keith several times already, but he could definitely have written for any of the publishers, and it was, you know, I'm very grateful that he was prepared to try it with us and you know, allow me to make one or two mistakes on how we did things at the very beginning and give me a bit of slack. And you know, he stuck with me. As I say, we now have four of his books. But so getting authors has been a joy, and that's the sort of fun bit of the whole business, really, is the relationships with the authors and with some customers who we sort of get to know better. Selling is the big challenge for any business. And, you know, it's okay now, but it was tough in the early days.
Yeah.
I think we launched on the 1st of September 2011, and I think it was 23 days until we had our first sale. And that was a very, very scary time.
Yeah. I imagine if it was like a sale for one book as well, that wouldn't have been a large amount of money, would it, either, particularly then?
No, indeed, it was really quite small at the beginning. But You know, it's just, it's grown substantially. I think we had 1 year where there was a small blip, but I think in 10 of the 11 years, it's grown very significantly on the previous year. So it's now, you know, it's now a real publishing business.
Yeah.
And selling is always, you know, if you run your business, you've got to sell your product. So that's always part of it. But customers just appear. Often we don't know where they've come from, but they just appear and it now works.
What would you say has contributed the most then to getting Claritax to grow year on year? What do you think is, like, if you can put your finger on like that one thing that has made a massive difference, what do you think it's been?
It's not one factor. It has to be lots of things. So, I mean, advertising for us has never been the answer. So we do bits of advertising just to remind people that we're there or to flag up particular new titles that come up, but that's not enough. It's come through lots of different initiatives. We ran something with the ICPA for a number of years, sort of book promotions. We have an agreement, the CIOT and ATT do sort of periodic little promotions of our books. We've got this relationship now with Crono Eye, who take most of our content under license from us, and they sell. We've gone to conferences, tax conferences and other places. Word of mouth. We've created recently this new website, Claritax News website, which is just started at the beginning of this year. And that's a sort of quality news website, but also has some sort of little promotions of our books there. So it's, you know, lots of different things all the time. You're sort of thinking, you know, how do you build it up? And obviously, once we have customers, we're very cautious not to sort of spam them, but they get occasional emails from us about new books or whatever. And we've actually got a very loyal customer base who come back for new titles and new editions of existing titles.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's a testament to the fact that they find the books good quality and very valuable.
Well, I hope so. I guess it is, because they wouldn't, you know, have no obligation to come back. But yeah, we have had, you know, we've had very positive feedback, and obviously we've made, you know, we haven't got everything right, but we've tried to learn as we've gone along. And yeah, there's no doubt that a lot of our customers do really value the books.
Yeah. So I know you've kind of talked a bit about like your career as a whole already, and as you kind of alluded to about your dad maybe not agreeing with some of the decisions you've made since his passing, yeah. If he was to know that these things have happened, and I think there's probably quite a lot of people that would look at some of the decisions you've made and maybe consider them as crazy or bold. Like, what advice would you give to people who are considering doing something along the same lines as what you've done in terms of like boldness?
Oh gosh. Okay, I suppose the first obvious answer is you don't start a business for a quiet life. I mean, don't set out to build a business thinking it's going to be a bit of a softer option than working for someone else. I've never minded working hard, but I've definitely worked harder in the past 12 years than ever before. There are obviously pros and cons to working for other people or for yourself. So a regular salary payment dropping into your bank account is not to be sniffed at, and probably pension contributions from your employer on top of that. And there are lots of employment protections in place nowadays, though obviously redundancies can still happen, of course. I think if you're going to start your own business, I just think you have to have a passion for it. And I think that passion has to be about more than just earning money, though obviously you hope you're going to do financially as well. If the business takes years to get going and you know, quite possibly you're going to be earning less than you were before as an employee in the early years anyway, you just need something else to get you up each morning and to fire you up for each working day. So I think that's it. And also, which we've touched on, before doing anything too risky, especially if you've got family commitments, you should really try and develop a skill that will give you a route back if the venture fails. So, you know, as I said, I'd sort of built up a consultancy thing. So I did have that to fall back on. I think it's difficult to get the timing right. So I was 50 when I launched Claritas Books. Part of me wishes I'd done it when I was 40, because I'm now in my early 60s and there's still so much I want to do and hope to do, but it would be nice to be 10 years younger. But on the other hand, Claritas Books involves using a whole range of skills that I acquired earlier in my tax career. So I think thinking about that timing is important. If you do have a family like I do, make sure they're on board, because you're certainly going to need all the support you can get. One other thing. Don't burn bridges unless you have to. So if you are leaving your current role, do it politely and on good terms. I've seen a couple of things in my career. People who, you know, it's Friday at the end of their last week, they go out, have too much to drink at lunchtime, go back to the office, send an email round to everybody in the entire organization telling them what they think of them.
Wow.
That's not a good way of leaving your present role if ever you want any chance of getting back into the profession.
Yeah. I can't believe people do that.
There was one example in particular. I won't name the organization or the individual, but it was entertaining in a way to read, but you just think, oh, what are you doing? But with those caveats, if you think it's right for you, you know, go for it. And it's great as well. But it can be tough, but it can be great.
There was this one book I read, actually, that made this reference to, like, if you try and do your own thing too soon, then you're not going to have scores that are good enough that people are going to value and pay for. And if you do it too late, then you become in a position where it's so difficult to, like, leave your employer, because you maybe earn such a good salary, like, you're so busy, and so you don't get time to even consider any other things. So really trying to get that sweet spot is obviously good. There's not a right and wrong answer, is there? Because you could always leave a little bit earlier or a little bit later, and it could have worked out better, but you'd never know, really. It's just being sensible about it, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly that. I think exactly that. Probably one shouldn't put a figure on it, but I think probably if you get good experience under your belt for 15 years, maybe, and then go out, maybe that would be a sweet spot, 15, 20 years. You need to be pretty good at something before you go off, both so that you can do well in the new venture, and if we're thinking in cautious terms, so that you've got something that you can really fall back on. That would be how I'd see it anyway.
Yeah. Do you think actually, Ray, because you were obviously at CCH for, I think you said, 8 years before you set up Claritas Books. So do you think actually, if you are considering setting up your own venture, actually staying somewhere for a long time first, that you've got, like, strong relationships in that organisation, is better, so that you could potentially go back rather than, say, have loads of 2-year jobs where you won't have had such deep relationships with the people you're working with in that organisation?
There's a balance. I mean, early in my career, I did move around quite a lot. I was only with the revenue for just over 3 years. I think I was with Baker Tilly for just over 3 years. But then I was with Neville Russell and, you know, stroke Mazar for, I think it was 10 years. I mean, when I was at Mazar, I had a bit of an HR role as well. And when we were, you know, looking at CVs to recruit people, I would get a bit concerned if somebody had had too many roles that lasted 18 months to 2 years. I think there's a sense, maybe at the start of your career, you know, you can make a few mistakes and move on. But I think it's quite good sometimes in the sort of early to middle part of a career to dig in, to put some roots down, to gain some seniority and get a slight different perspective on things. I think that's quite useful. I think there is a danger of moving on too fast too often.
Yeah, agreed. So kind of looking back then, because I think you said you're 60 now, so you've had a long career so far, and I'm sure you've received a lot of good pieces of advice, career advice in that time. Is there like any piece of career advice that really stand out to you that you remember that you could share with us?
Yes, there is, and it was right at the beginning of my tax career. So I mentioned that I joined the Inland Revenue as a graduate. So I was, what was I? I'd had 3 years living and working abroad, actually, but I was 24 or 25 or something. I had a colleague called Adrian Turner who was doing a similar role, but who was quite a lot older than me. And he was 2 years ahead of me in the revenue. And so when I was training, I would sort of get stuck on something, and he was meant to be my mentor. So I would go to him and say, you know, you'll know the answer to this. It'll take me half an hour to work it out. Can you save me that half hour and sort of tell me the answer? And he was absolutely rigorous in making me go back, get out the tax legislation, work through it step by step, and then only go to him when I identified the precise nature of the issue that I couldn't cope with. So in other words, breaking technical problems down to step by step. And of course, 9 times out of 10, when you do that, actually you can work it out. So just clarifying that, I think for anyone working in tax, I would say just learn as early as possible how to work something out, how to work out an answer based on the tax law, on the statutory position. Sometimes the answer will still be uncertain, and that's where tax commentary can be so useful, because it shares the experience of other people. But every single tax query should be resolved as far as possible from a close reading of the statutory rules, because that's what counts, not HMR guidance nor advice from anyone else. If the law says X, then that's what matters. Of course, there may often be legitimate different interpretations. But I think that fundamental skill of being able to look at the tax law and say, in this scenario, this is what the law says, I think that's underpinned every stage of my own tax career. And it should, in my view, be probably the foundation for every serious tax practitioner.
Yeah, I actually 100% agree with you. And I think a lot of people overlook it, because like you would have done when you first started with that person, by the sounds of it, you wanted to take the easy route. You wanted to just get someone to tell you the answer to save you the time and effort. Whereas obviously it does take time and effort to figure it out for yourself. And so I think because of that, a lot of people don't do it. But for me, it's a top three skill for being a successful tax professional, being able to find the answer to tax questions, any tax question, and then being able to communicate it as well is, a second one in those top three. For me, if you can't do those things, I just don't see how you can have a strong career as a tax professional.
No, I agree with that. And obviously, you know, we all have different advantages and disadvantages in life, and training in the revenue, one huge advantage was I wasn't, you know, we didn't have timesheets. I didn't have to account to anybody if it took me an hour to work something out. And if you're a junior in an accounting firm and you're charging your time out at X pounds an hour, and you have to account for however many chargeable hours each week, you know, that creates a different tension and pressure. But still, if you want to do well long term in the tax world as a tax consultancy or author or whatever it might be, I think somehow you have to acquire that skill.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, though, on that note, if even say you're the manager of that person doesn't know the answer, then they're going to have to find out, and that more junior member of staff early in their career is going to cost less per hour. So it could end up actually being more cost effective if they do that and do a good job of it too. I know it's not always the case.
Yeah. I mean, it will depend on the particular circumstances, but yes, and that person will certainly become much more valuable if he or she can acquire that skill. You know, that will be a very useful employee for the firm to have.
Absolutely. And I think actually it probably builds a lot of trust with more senior people in your team straight away. If they can trust you with something that's complex like that quite early on, I just think it sets you up well.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I've done the sort of tax consultancy work I've done over the years has mostly been for accountants rather than for individual taxpayers or you know, businesses. I've tended to do it to accountants, and I've just acquired the habit over the years of when I do it, I sort of back it up by saying, you know, this is the answer, you know, see section 11 of the Capital Allowances Act or whatever it might be, because that's then an authoritative answer. You know, that is then the right answer, and the person receiving the advice knows it's the right answer and can look it up if he wants to or she wants to.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. And if you did put something as if it was fact, then you quote the legislation, they went and looked and it was wrong, it would make you look pretty silly, wouldn't it? So it just makes sure.
Yeah. I think sort of having authoritative advice is so fundamental, because you can, you know, there are lots of different tax websites out there and discussions and whatever. But in the end, if it's just a matter of, oh, I think this is how the law works, or I think, you know, I disagree, I think it should work like that, that's not worth anything.
No.
Unless you can prove what the answer is. And I mentioned we've launched this Claritax News website. And basically what we have there is little news stories, but every single one ends with a link to the authoritative source. So that's the structure of the site. You have a news story, and then you show why you're saying what you say, and it might be a case report, or it might be a bit of legislation, or it might be HMRC guidance, which, okay, isn't ultimately the law, but if you're saying, you know, this is how the revenue apply this bit of legislation, and then every single time we're saying, and here's how we know that, this, and just click on this link if you want proof of what we're saying.
If you were to kind of give your younger self now some career advice, knowing what you now know, what do you think that would be, Ray?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I really don't have many regrets at all, and I'm not sure I'd do anything very differently. I think the temptation, if I was speaking to my younger self, would be to advise greater caution. But I'm kind of glad I didn't, if you see what I mean. And there's obviously a balance to be struck between caution and professional ambition. And I think each individual has to work that balance out for himself or herself based on, you know, their particular circumstances. But no, I can't immediately think that there's anything that sort of, you know, I'd love to have heard from me now to me 30 years ago.
What kind of tips and advice would you like to leave people with who want to have a successful career and want to continue progressing and developing themselves?
Yeah, okay. Another interesting one. Well, I've already given one, which is probably the big one, about learning to work with the legislation. As we've said, I think that's fundamental. And you responded to that by saying also being able to sort of express things clearly. And obviously that's something I feel very passionately about. I think there are some people with very good tax knowledge who are very bad at expressing it, particularly in writing. So I think acquiring the skill of writing clear, of explaining tax concepts clearly is, again, of sort of immense value. More generally, I think just treasure your tax career. You know, tax isn't inherently exciting, but if you can put in the effort to acquire the necessary skills and to give that sort of high level tax advice, it can be rewarding, it can be well paid. I don't think it's going to be taken over by a robot anytime too soon. So I think tax is potentially a great career.
I agree. I'm going to slightly push back though and saying that it's not kind of intrinsically interesting, because I personally think it is. As long as you're interested in things that are complex and piecing things together, I suppose it takes the right person, doesn't it, to be interested in a career in tax.
Yeah, I mean, I love it, but you know, occasionally I'm out with, you know, meeting somebody and they say, "What do you do?" And I say, "I'm in publishing," and it's funny, their faces light up with excitement, and then they ask for a bit more detail. Okay, well, it's books for accountants and lawyers about tax, and they just can't hide it. Their face just turns from one of excitement to one of horror. But if you're in the tax world, you know, it can be great fun.
Yeah, so you've learned in a way not to start by saying tax. Because we all know how people respond when you say that. So you started saying publishing. I like it.
Yeah, but it's always like that. For some reason, publishing is seen as very sexy and exciting. But tax publishing, boy, you must be crazy. But you know, there we are. It's worked for me.
Yeah. So if people want to learn more about you, Ray, anyway, where are the best places for them to go?
Okay, gosh. Well, there are different aspects. So obviously our Claritax Books website is the place to go for, you know, if they want to know more about books or whatever. I've mentioned our Claritax News website, claritaxnews.com, which is a free to use news website. We think it looks good and it's sort of divided up into different tax areas and whatever. So that's that. I did do a series of, this was a few years ago now, but they're mostly still current. I did a series of about 30 training videos on capital allowances, and those are all available on the sixforward.com website. So if anyone's particularly interested in capital allowances, I think it's sixforward.com/video, if I remember right. So there are three different things: Claritax Books, Claritax News, sixforward.com.
Show notes, which include all the links mentioned throughout this episode, can be found at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/TTPP69. This includes links to Claritax's website and also the Claritax News website. As you could hear just towards the end there, Ray believes being able to use the legislation, interpret it, and then communicate it are important skills for us as tax professionals. If you'd like to improve your practical skills in this area, why not take a look at the Tax Research Masterclass that I deliver? Full details can be found at thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/masterclasses. The next one should be in September 2023, but the dates are still to be confirmed. Just a reminder of the discount code TTPP5. You can use it to get a discount from any of Claritax's products until the 27th of April 2023. If you enjoyed this episode, head on over to thetaxprofessionalspodcast.com/subscribe to sign up for email notifications. You'll get an email directly into your inbox about future episodes, which are bi-weekly and are released on Mondays. But that's it for this episode. Hope you enjoyed the episode and have taken away some useful points to help you to progress, develop, and improve your tax career. Until next time.